Jack Ablin, a frequent guest, Chief Investment Officer at Crescent Capital. Do you want to do this today, Jack, or should we just move on to somebody else?
No, I'm face the music.
No, it's not your fault, but whose fault is it? What's going on here?
Yeah, well, I mean, a lot of it is self-inflicted in many respects. This is an escalating trade war that now we're engaging with Europe, we're engaging with Canada, Mexico, China, and it's funny because it's similar to what we recall from Trump 1.0. I remember Europe putting tariffs on Kentucky whiskey and certain other red state products, and this is a sort of the same backlash that we had last time around.
Only worse, because all the numbers are larger and the participants are more numerous. Do you suppose when this all does get resolved, I mean, if it's going to be 50% or 200% or 20%, whatever it's going to be, at some point, I would imagine, it will be resolved. And if it's not as draconian as it sounds now, do you think that these losses are going to be reclaimed?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, part of it is we have to keep in mind, John, that the S&P 500 was pretty extended going into 2025. In fact, it's, by some measures, you could argue it was almost, 25% overdone when you look at interest rates, when you look at earnings growth and all those other pieces. Interestingly, we're seeing that European stocks are actually moving higher so far this year. So, you know, it's not like this is the end of the world for all stocks everywhere. I mean, this is certainly more of an S&P 500 story.
Yeah, well, that makes it an American story. We've wiped out the gains that were made since the election. There was a Trump bump, but it's all gone now, right?
That's it. Yeah, there was certainly a lot of enthusiasm that we would get a lot of stimulus through, extended tax cuts, lower regulation and all that. And I think that's in the pipeline. But the timing is unfortunate. We're talking about tariffs first and really not seeing any of that that potential stimulus till later.
So the markets aren't impervious to this. What about inflation? What about employment? How have those numbers been settling around these tariffs?
Yeah, so, job market's still okay. Inflation's still okay, although a lot of the inflation numbers haven't, taken into account these tariffs yet. But some of the measures that I watch, most notably the bond market, suggests that the economy is still in reasonable shape. The yield premium that lenders require to extend credit to lower quality borrowers is still pretty low. I mean, if they sense that, delinquencies or defaults would start to rise, they would require a higher premium. We haven't seen that yet.
I think there's some people that must hope that this is the tearing off of the Band-Aid. Doge isn't doing it smart, and I'm not sure that the president's methods are smart either. But if in the long run we get better trade agreements and whatever the heck else we want, maybe in the long run we'll look back on this and say, yeah, that sucked, but it was worth it. Do you think that's something that we'll be saying? And if so, when will we say that?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. And, if we look at, for example, the volatility index, all of the volatility is really up front in the first month. And as you start to extend out in months, the volatility expectation actually goes down. And rarely does that happen. Normally, it's quieter in the front months and then, higher in the later months. So when you see the volatility curve invert like this, that does suggest that, yes, it's a tempest right here. Maybe it's a tempest in the teapot, but we think that over time things will settle down. At least that's what the options market is telling us.
But I am looking at the uncertainty index, and where are the peaks? It's 2008, 2009 during the housing bubble crisis. Everybody's stocks went to poop. Eventually they came back. 2020 when we had a pandemic, and maybe we could have prevented the housing bubble in 7, 8, 9. We couldn't have prevented the pandemic. I mean, that just happened.
Right. Yep.
But this one's different. This is just us inventing a problem, and the uncertainty index is relative to those other two.
It's remarkable. We're, you know, really approaching levels that we haven't seen since those crises. And you're absolutely right. This is, you know, like I said, you know, self-inflicted. The president is determined to balance trade policy. I suppose the good news is, if you think about it, that our trade partners will likely be worse off than we if this escalates. You know, keep in mind that while Canada imports and Mexico imports represent about 15% of our overall imports, Canada's exports to the U.S. are 80% of their exports, and Mexico is about 75% of their exports. So this really is, you know, from a game theory perspective, probably advantage U.S., but you're right, there's going to be some near-term pain, but I'm hopeful we'll get some longer-term gain out of it.
This is going to hurt them a lot more than it's going to hurt us. I think that's pretty clear. So are the Canadians going to hold their breath longer than we do or not? It does seem like, however injurious to their economy this would be, there is a new resolve in Canada, isn't there?
There is, yeah. In fact, it's funny that the Conservative Party, which was leading in the polls because of the quote-unquote dysfunction in their economy, is now trailing in the polls because of the unity surrounding this trade situation. So, you know, we'll have to see how that flips the balance of power in Canada.
Yeah, talk about reverse coattails. Now that Mark Carnahan guy may end up being the prime minister just because people don't want any association with the maple MAGA up there, right?
That's it. Yeah, it's so it's a complete turn of events over the last 3 weeks.
Well, I think, however dire things seem right now, you seem cool, calm, and collected, and that's why we go to you, Jack. I appreciate your thoughts and insight today.
Thanks, John.
That's Jack Ablin, and he is the Chief Investment Officer at Crescent Capital, crescentcapital.com. Bree Fowler is a senior writer at CNET.com. Welcome back, Bree.
Thanks for having me.
First on my list is Meta and France. I don't want to spend a lot of time talking about that, or do I? What's that story?
Well, it's another, issue with AI. French publishers and authors are taking Meta to court, and they're saying that the social media company is using their work without permission to train its AI models.
So what does that mean?
Well, I mean, they're taking copyrighted books and other material, feeding it to the AI, and then it becomes part of the AI. And the problem and the issue that a lot of authors, and not just in France, all over the world, are worried about is that it'll be used to generate fake books or, you know, imitation knockoffs of their work, and that devalues their work. And you've seen artists all over the world, including here in the U.S., file lawsuits over this, whether they're authors or musicians or actors.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about it in terms of the international community. Either the New York Times, for instance, said, hey, you can't just mine our stuff and then use it. Mm-hmm. That's copyrighted material. But I guess Le Monde or some singer in France would have the same sort of concern, huh?
Right. And in the EU, they actually have copyright law that deals with AI now. They've kind of taken the lead on AI regulation. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, what kind of precedent this sets, not just in France, but in the EU overall.
So how do you think this lands then, Bree? Say I take a singer and I sample his voice and then I write a song and then I use AI to have that singer's voice sing my song. I could even make it match the lips of that singer and make it look like they're singing my song in their voice. That's not unheard of right now. I wonder what that means in terms of copyright and AI.
You know, I think with a lot of things, it comes down to money. If you start profiting off of that, then they might take issue with that. It definitely is something that needs to be sorted out, because on the other side, you know, there's a lot of satire and comedy and things like that with deepfakes and AI that, you know, we all kind of enjoy and that are not meant to be malicious and that, you know, they shouldn't be sued particularly, maybe.
What's the latest on cybersecurity and election cybersecurity? There's a story about that on CNET also. What are you writing about there?
Well, if you haven't heard, the Trump administration is cutting a few jobs in the federal government. And cybersecurity is no exception to that. They're losing millions of dollars in funding for cybersecurity activities, including a lot that goes to election security. And this is through the U.S. Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, which we for shorthand call CISA. And CISA helps not just companies and consumers, but also state and local election officials, you know, shore up their operations, make sure that, you know, that their elections are being held safely and securely. And a lot of that money is going away now.
Why? Why would they cut there?
Well, I mean, why would they cut the Department of Education? It's, you know, it's all politics and it's all Elon Musk and his chainsaw, you know. Really nothing is safe now. And, you know, the ironic thing is that President Trump still maintains that, you know, the second time he ran for president, the election was stolen from him because of insecure elections. But yet we're taking money away from election security. I mean, have all the problems been fixed?
Yeah. Well, I wonder about that. It does seem like since they think that the elections, he still says that he was robbed. And it's a federal agency said, no, you weren't. So maybe he's mad at the agencies that would safeguard the integrity of the elections. But I wonder then what we are going to do about that. Somebody's going to run again in a few years. Hopefully somebody in the federal government will oversee the authenticity of the vote, right?
Right. And, you know, there are problems with nation state attackers going after U.S. elections. While we have not had, you know, elections, there's been no proof that any election has been stolen or, you know, successfully influenced by countries like Russia or others. They've definitely tried. And this is something that we have to, you know, protect against. And most elections are run at the state and local level. These are county and state officials that don't have a lot of resources. They don't necessarily have a lot of staff or know-how. And agencies like CISA have been instrumental in helping them.
It just makes no sense. Bree Fowler is a senior writer at CNET. Sometimes you don't want to look, but we need to pay attention to this sort of thing. CNET.com certainly does. Bree, it's always nice to visit with you. Well, it's almost always nice to visit with you. Thank you for thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Let's talk a little bit about properties in the city of Chicago, maybe downtown. Brian, you're on the air. How are you?
I'm doing great, John. How are you? Thanks
really
for
good.
Having me.
My pleasure. So you're the vice president of leasing and acquisitions. Do you guys acquire some of these properties in the city and then develop them, turn them, find tenants for them?
Yeah. So the owner of our firm, Mr. Al Friedman, he's been working in the River North market for over 50 years. So he is a we have long been in this market acquiring, redeveloping assets, creating mixed-use assets, and we are always looking to grow.
Describe for our audience what River North is. So if you're working that space in the city, where are you?
Yeah, so we're located just north of the Loop, or the easier way to describe is just north of the Chicago River, wedged between Michigan Avenue to the east and the river to the west.
The river to the west. Well, if you're going east from Michigan Avenue and north of the river, do you go all the way to Lakeshore Drive then? Is that what you're saying?
No, Lakeshore, I'm sorry. Michigan Avenue would be to the east of the River North submarket.
Got it. So what are some of the properties I would know in that area then?
Yeah, so if you drive up and down Clark Street all the way from the river to the south up to Grand Avenue, you'd run into a plethora of what we would call a restaurant row. And, you know, you've got restaurants like Frontera Grill and RPM Italian and Steak. And these are all vibrant restaurants that are in the River North markets and within our portfolio. We are home to quite a bit of vintage boutique properties that offer retail on the ground floor and amazing charm office space above.
And is that the trend? Is that maybe the necessity? We're trying to get people to come back downtown rather than build new buildings. We got to gussy up some of the ones that are down there. Is that what's happening?
Yeah. So no doubt we've definitely faced some market headwinds over the past several years. We've seen a ton of activity in the last 6 months or so. increasing over the last 60 days. And what we've seen is a really return to work mandate by some companies, but certainly several days a week, we are seeing an increase of folks coming to the market. We believe that the River North submarket, given its diversity of office and retail and vibrant hospitality, immersive experiences, all this is driving people to this submarket, and it's become an attractive point for a lot of employers and employees alike.
So what do you put in those buildings then? What are you specifically, what are you talking about? Is it a cafe? Is it some sort of recreational or daycare on the property? What do you do to attract people to those places?
Yeah, so it's a mix of shopping, restaurants, nightlife, immersive experiences. You may have read in the last week there was a great immersive experience announced for David Byrne's Theater of the Mind. That's an exciting new event that's coming to River North, and you know it's going to draw 100,000 visitors over the course of the first year and have a tremendous economic impact.
So are you looking for tenants residential, or are you looking for business tenants?
Business tenants is our core focus.
And then how do you, what can you do? I mean, I guess you can make the spaces as attractive as you can. If people think taxes or politics or crime or the economy, whatever the reason is, they don't want to expand or come into the city, can I presume you can't fight that. But for the people that are willing to come in, and not that it's, you know, a problem, but I'm talking to you from downtown, not too far from where you're talking about. It's lovely. The area you're describing is lovely. But I guess you can only do what you can do, make those buildings as affordable and as attractive as possible, right?
Yeah. So what we like to say is we're really aiming to provide what we call a commute-worthy experience. And I think as part of what the world's going through right now, for employees and employers, they're looking for a soup-to-nuts solution. That means from the moment you walk out of your home to the moment you arrive back at your home, you're looking for an experience. So that means you wake up in the morning, you get ready for work, and you want an easy commute, right? No one wants to play planes, trains, automobiles anymore. It's got to be a streamlined shot, yeah, right? Yeah. So we're looking for an easy commute. When you get off your bus or out of your car or off the train, you want to be able to stop at that, you know, that coffee shop that's next to your building or in your building and get that artisanal coffee experience. Walk into a building that's got a renovated lobby, offers amenities either in the building or throughout the neighborhood. Be able to walk out to lunch and have, you know, 50 plus restaurants a stone's throw from your doorstep. Meet your friends or colleagues for a cocktail or for dinner after work. Go enjoy one of those immersive experiences after that, right? And then have that easy commute back home. That's the type of experience that we believe is present at River North, is attractive, and why we've seen robust demand over the last 6 months.
Yeah, I mean, you have just described River North. The Reed Murdoch building, talk about that a little bit.
The Reed Murdoch building is just an absolute stunner of a building. We own the building. It's located on the north bank of the river. It's an old historical distribution center for Monarch Foods and the Reed Murdoch Company. And we have created an adaptive reuse building there. And we've recently undergone some significant renovations. So we're currently unveiling a brand new lobby, new 6,000 square feet of amenities that includes a fitness center, a tenant lounge. It's where the David Byrne immersive experience is going as well for Theater of the Mind. And we're creating this great experience in this location. And we're building lots of spec suites. So one of the spec suite is an office suite that is pre-built, pre-designed, pre-built, pre-furnished. So it makes it easy for a tenant to walk in and say, I like this. I can be in here in 30 days or less. And so we're really excited about what we're doing at this building. And we're going to continue doing those type of things throughout the River North submarket.
So you have spec suites the way maybe a developer would have spec houses residential. I can come in and see what the office experience would be like there. Is that it?
That's exactly right.
Yeah. And then are you looking for businesses that are expanding or relocating? Like, who's a prospective client for you?
Yeah, so we're looking for expansion, relocation, really everybody within the office realm. Our retail at the building is filled at this point. But we, you know, it's an exciting time, and there's lots of companies that are expanding. We've experienced some of that within our own building. But we're looking for folks that want to be in that 24/7 live, work, play type environment.
Yeah, no kidding. Is the casino then in your River North? How far will you be from the casino then?
Yeah, so the casino is about 3 blocks away, the temporary casino. It's about 3 blocks away. And they will be relocating sometime in the near future upon the completion of their development. But that's another great thing for the submarket as a whole. It creates that immersive experience that people are looking for and a diversified experience.
Yeah, no kidding. Any last note, Brian? What else should we just know about? I mean, how healthy would you say the market is over there right now?
Yeah, so again, there's certainly been headwinds over, you know, over the past several years coming out of the COVID era. But it's really a tale of three markets. And we believe that the tale that we're living within is the tenants and the companies that want to be in that live, work, play environment that have that commute worthy experience. So we're really excited about where we are, how we're positioned, the suites that we're offering, the vintage charm of our buildings. And we think that this is a great place to be, and we're excited to continue thriving.
Brian Chernett is the Vice President of Leasing and Acquisitions at Friedman Properties, friedmanproperties.com. Good luck, Brian. I'm glad you're doing what you're doing.
Thanks, John. I really appreciate your time.
More news now on the Wintrust Business Lunch with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Lamont National Bank has been acquired by Newmark Credit Union. According to Crane's, financial terms of the deal have not been disclosed. The purchase will boost Newmark's presence in the southwest suburbs. Newmark will take over 2 Lamont branches and pick up about $45 million in deposits. After the deal closes later this year, Newmark will have 15 branches and about $910 million in deposits. The deal will require shareholder and regulatory approval. A popular restaurant chain in California is opening a location in Chicago. Mendocino Farms will open its first Midwest location this summer in River North at 508 North Clark. Mendocino Farms is known for its seasonal sandwiches and salads. The company says all of its menu items are sourced from high-quality ingredients. The chain was founded in 2005 and now has 70 locations nationally. The Chicago location will offer dine-in, carry-out, and catering. It'll also have an outdoor dining area. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Now, Steve Alexander is off last couple of days. WGN's Mike Lowe will take us on a trip to a Bridgeport staple serving the Big Baby Burrito. In this business report, which is sponsored by Chevy Silverado, there's never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. Find out now at ChevyDriveChicago.com.
West 33rd and South Morgan Streets. When you come to this fork in the road...
You gotta try it. As soon as you try it, you'll be here every day.
It may be best to use your hands.
A masterpiece, in my opinion, and I'm about to try it out.
Especially if you order the biggest burrito in Chicago.
Huge, huge. I mean, it's enormous.
It's close to about 2 foot. It takes about 15 to 20 minutes if we're not busy.
Rudy Martinez owns this neighborhood staple. It's a grocery store in front and a restaurant in back. It was opened back in 1986 by Rudy's father, Jesus, who still stirs the pinto beans. Rudy comes up with some of the big creations, like the Big Baby Burrito.
They make a special tortillas for us.
Two overlapping flour tortillas are connected by a bed of shredded cheese, topped with heaps of seared, spiced,
then we got a special seasoning,
and sliced skirt steak.
And we comes with beans, cheese, lettuce, tomato, onions, cilantro, and sour cream.
All of the ingredients are piled in proper proportions, topped with lettuce and cheese.
We need 4 hands for this one.
Then it takes a tandem to roll and fold the stuffed tortillas.
We gotta tuck it in nice and neat.
Like blankets, swaddling a newborn baby.
That's why I call it a baby. You know, you can just grab it like a baby, you know, just grab it, otherwise it'll fall apart on you.
It can weigh up to 7 pounds and measures almost 2 feet.
20 inches, right? I think it's my arm shorter.
It's as big as an arm and costs a leg.
$59.99. So a little pricey, but as you can see, it's meaty.
Customers say the Big Baby Burrito is worth ordering.
It could probably feed 6. That's how huge it is.
if you find yourself at this fork in the roll.
Extraordinary, for sure.
Mike Lowe, WGN News.
The Elmhurst History Museum has a new exhibit. Let's talk about that for a minute with Sarah Cox, who is the curator of that exhibit. Sarah, you're on WGN.
Hi, good afternoon.
I'm glad that you're on with us. We do a lot of farm radio, have for years on this radio station. We still do agribusiness, and you have Acre by Acre, Our Farming Heritage, which opens up on Friday, right?
It does, yeah. We're very excited about it. You know, we started as a farming community here before we were a bustling suburb, and it's a story we wanted to tell, and we, you know, this is kind of our peak field trip season for kids, so, you know, we want them to understand that it didn't always look like this. It was big, open fields. We were a prairie, so we're excited to have this.
So what do we see when we go?
When you go, I kind of bookended the years as 1850 to 1950, kind of the real start of when people started to come to Elmhurst and to DuPage, really. And those people were coming from Ohio, Pennsylvania, New York. But then we also had immigrants coming from Germany, England, Ireland. A lot of our population was German at the time, nearly 20% were coming here. And they were farmers, and they were dealing with some issues in Germany, dealing with farms, making them smaller. And so they came here. Land was, it was $1.25 an acre. And so they wanted to start their new lives here and start raising their family here. And so we just kind of follow that journey about, like, why did they come here? Why was Illinois great for farming? Who was here? We look at some of the big families who owned, you know, nearly 1,000 acres worth of land, and it was all spread out throughout DuPage. We look at the tools, what they were growing, what they were raising in terms of livestock. We look at innovation. Chicago is kind of a nice little hub. I even want to say just Illinois in general. You know, we had John Deere, who was out in Moline, come up with the first steel plow. We had the McCormick Reaper, and he later gets into tractors. So that's an important story to tell. And we kind of end on this growth of the suburbs and why the farms disappeared. And then we encourage kids, you know, and families, you know, to look at, you know, supporting your local farm. We still have around 70 farms here in DuPage operating as farms, and they usually sell their goods at farmers markets. We do have a farmers market here in Elmhurst. So just talking, you know, we really want to make sure that kids walk away and know that, you know, their chicken nuggets come from a farm in a way, but they come from chickens and not the grocery store. Your food comes from a farm.
Yeah. Lettuce isn't grown in bags. And your thing is kind of interactive too, isn't it?
It is, yeah. So we have a couple things throughout the exhibition. The first one where I talk about families, and I talk about, you know, the family unit was really part of the farm. Everybody was involved. You know, at that time, you know, in the 19th century, kids weren't required like they are today to go to school. And so they went to school when they could, but their main, you know, responsibility was helping the family. And so one of the interactives I have is, you know, we were a big dairy community here in DuPage. And so I have two buckets in there. One bucket is 8 pounds, one bucket is 4 pounds. And I kind of say, hey, can you imagine milking 5 cows twice a day, lifting this bucket back and forth, and doing that every single day of your life? We also have our little interactive, I call it my kids' farmer's market. It's just a little play area where I recreated a farmer's market. We also have a little station where you got to guess the top three crops that are being grown in Illinois today. I think one of them will surprise people.
Yeah, I can guess two, but the third, that's a good way to put it. Okay, so this is the, if I go to elmhursthistory.org, elmhursthistory, yeah. Everything I need to know is there. Sarah Cox is the curator of exhibits, Elmhurst History Museum. I'm out of time today, but I love the sound of this, Sarah. It sounds spot on. It's so smart for kids and adults.
Yes, absolutely, for the family.
ElmhurstHistory.org. Thank you, Sarah. Well done.
Thank you so much. Have a good day.
Acre by Acre, they call it, and that opens on the 14th.